This section will serve as a type of workbook. It will summarize the lessons learned from each chapter and then provide a self-awareness exercise that applies the lessons. You can do this as an individual or as part of a Hero Within book circle community. Chapter 1, Lessons on Accessing the Hero Within. We are all here for a single purpose, to grow in wisdom and to learn to love better. We can do this through losing as well as through winning, by having and not having, by succeeding or by failing. All we need to do is to show up open-heartedly for class. When we do, we redeem the destiny we were born to fulfill. We are born with an imprinted destiny, like the giant oak tree mapped within the proverbial acorn. Each of us possesses this goal-directed vitality that tries to grow the seed of ourselves into fruition. As we learn to trust the vision we were born to fulfill, we start relying on inward vitality and passion to attain it. In the process, we become less dependent on other people's approval, appreciation, love, and acceptance. Fear also becomes less and less relevant. What becomes most relevant is living from a place of deep integrity. Paradoxically, the things we so fearfully flee are the very things that free us up, growing us into our larger selves. Heroes show us how to encounter failure. They don't, quote-unquote, rise above or endure their hardships. They use their hardships to reach deeper depths within themselves. Then they are able to inhabit themselves more completely. Experiencing the eternity of the ever-present now is one of the gifts that death offers. It's an inward space where past, present, and future coexist. Within our depths, a hero is waiting to be born. Accessing the hero is a rather straightforward process, but it requires courage, honesty, and humility to do so. The process is simple, although it is not easy. Chapter 1 Self-Awareness Exercise, entitled Depicting Our Life Story, Identifying the Puzzle Pieces. Create a long scroll using a roll of paper or taping pieces of paper together. Reflect over your life. What have been the significant events that have helped shape and mold your responses to the world? Think of each event as a piece of a puzzle containing information that helps you know and understand who and how you are. Think of your conscious self as the central pieces of conjoined puzzle with a homing device calling outline puzzle pieces that have been lost or forsaken. The more pieces consciously conjoined, the stronger the homing signal will be. If there are not many conjoined central pieces, the signal will be weak, and you will have to listen closely to hear the self calling broken pieces back into wholeness. Alternatively, you could create your life story in the computer. First, write the significant events and people on a timeline that starts with your birth and ends with today. You may want to draw pictures, or use stickers, or colored markers, or computerized graphics to highlight different events. Second, using a 1 to 10 scale, with 1 equaling minor, 5 significant, 10 major, rate how much your life was impacted by each significant event or person depicted on your scroll. These writings should include, Second, Using a 1 to 10 scale, with 1 being minor, 5 or so significant, 10 being major, rate how much your life was impacted by each significant event or person depicted on the scroll. These ratings should include both positive and negative people and experiences. Third, review your life story again. What else needs to go on it? Do any of your ratings seem inappropriate? For example, if your mother died when you were young, a rating of 3 might be minimizing the impact unless there was another person who heroically filled the gap. Remember to include seemingly little events that took you either away from yourself or toward yourself. For example, you were called selfish when you pursued any personal interests rather than working the family business. This experience may have caused you to become less you by becoming overly responsible for taking care of others and not taking care of yourself with self-full hobbies like reading or taking long walks or going out with friends. On the other hand, a neighbor always told you how creative you were, prompting you to dress uniquely. As a result, you value your individuality, becoming more you. You can hide your life story so no one else sees it. It's really only important that you don't hide it from yourself. It will take honesty, courage, and humility to forthrightly uncover some of the aspects of how you responded to difficult situations and events. You will probably deny the significance of some events. Write them down anyway. You will have lots of ways to fool yourself into thinking you felt one way, when actually a facade hides the opposite feeling. Have the courage to persevere. Tell yourself that you want to experience all of yourself, even those parts that you don't want to see because you are afraid or even ashamed. These parts are especially in need of your energy and attention. They need a voice, so they no longer need to hide. Welcome this part of self home, so you can hear what he or she has to say to you. It can also be helpful to give your life story to someone who really knows you. If they are trustworthy, have them review your life story. Ask them to point out events and/or people you may have overlooked. Seek stories about yourself from them. Chapter 2, Lessons in Abiding. Neurosis is always a substitute for legitimate suffering. Or, as a Chinese proverb says, quote, suppression leads to momentary relief and permanent pain, whereas feeling the experience leads to momentary pain and permanent relief. End of quote. Abiding is showing up open-heartedly to all of the emotional dimensions of life, the good, the bad, and the ugly, and more importantly, embracing the part of self that is experiencing that feeling. Focused inward, abiding allows us to encounter ourselves. Focused outward, abiding allows us to vicariously experience the part of the other person that generates the emotion. Our abiding presence provides safety for the person to also experience their feeling self. Feelings are only, quote-unquote, negative when we close down to them by cutting ourselves off from the aspect of ourselves generating the feeling. That's a significant loss. This reaction often perpetuates what others have done to us to create these feelings in the first place. We become the abuser, the shamer, the neglecter of our own self. Every time I deny an emotion by covering it up, I'm lying. The part of self that is experiencing the feeling is left stranded. Recovering this part of self is important because we not only learn the truth it's trying to speak, but we regain its vitality. We can nurture the parts of ourselves we have exiled with our shame and neglect. This process begins when we open up to these scattered pieces of broken self so they will no longer be feared and therefore forsaken. Having the courage to give voice to these hidden parts of self releases their silent, unconscious power over us. Not letting other people's problems drain our energy requires understanding three things. First, we have to become comfortable with our own losings, failings, and sufferings. Second, we have to recognize that other people have a hero inside them, too. We can't access that hero for them. Third, we do not need to be afraid of uncertainty. In fact, we should learn how to befriend it when it accompanies change. While we are abiding with someone, we wear their moccasins with them. We store their footprints in our soul, but when it's time to leave, we give their moccasins back so they have protection for their souls as they walk without us. Otherwise, we become enablers. Enablers have a hard time seeing how much damage they do when they prevent people from discovering their heroes within. Chapter 2, Self-Awareness Exercise, entitled Understanding Our Relationships with the World, Others, and Ourselves. This awareness assignment has two parts. Both parts have relevance to how you orient yourself in relationships, roles, and problematic situations today. This assignment will help reveal puzzle pieces that may be missing from your whole self. The first part of this exercise will help you discover the emotional response you had to events that shaped you, as well as the part of self that may still be trapped in the experience. Review your life story from Chapter 1. Carefully look at how you emotionally responded to significant events and people. Remember, we have all of these feelings. It's part of our humanity. It's not about erasing the feelings. It's about hearing what they have to say so that you can make the acquaintance with the part of yourself generating the feeling. Your job is to show up for the human experience. By each event or person on the scroll, draw or write out how you emotionally responded. Emotional responses include feelings such as anger, fear, pain, happiness, uncertainty, security. Thoughts are not feelings. You can use words or you can use pictures to express your response. For example, Edvard Munch's painting, The Scream, might best depict a trauma you've experienced. The second part of the exercise will help reveal the relationship you have chosen to have with the event because of the emotional response it generated. So review your emotional responses. For each response, ask yourself these questions. What feelings were banished into the shadows because you were afraid of them when the event occurred? How did you numb those negative feelings? For example, overeating, staying busy, erecting a stoic wall, putting on a happy face. These are all common coping mechanisms. What did you hide from everyone else, even yourself? Remember, you have lots of ways to fool yourself into thinking you felt one way when actually a facade hides the opposite feeling. For example, you may have used anger to cover up emotional pain. Conversely, you may have used sadness or depression to cover up anger. You might hide happiness thinking you aren't worthy of it. Just make a list of feelings in others that scare you. What do you do with these feelings in yourself? Carl Jung says that neurosis is always a substitute for legitimate suffering. Ask yourself, what do I use as a substitute for legitimate suffering? It might be denial, blaming others, covering up unwanted feelings with more acceptable feelings, building stoic walls, overeating. Remember that to the extent that you blame others or deny your own experience, you lose yourself and the vitality of your authentic self dwindles. Have the courage to persevere. Tell yourself that you are willing to see all of yourself, even those parts that you've been denying that are even there. When you are done, go back and review your responses and ask yourself, what else? Dig deeper. A part of yourself might still be trapped in the experience, consuming energy unconsciously. On a 0 to 10 scale, rate how much aspect of self is still trapped in each experience. To help you determine this number, consider two things. First, have you really talked about the experience and let yourself experience the feelings that occurred? If not, there's a part of you that's still stuck feeling the feelings unconsciously because you refuse to open up to the emotions that are there. The energy of those feelings is blocked and segregated from self. So you would score yourself a high number because much of that aspect of self is still consumed with the experience. And secondly, on the other hand, you may have allowed yourself the honesty of the associated feelings without encountering the part of yourself that's generating the emotion. If so, you might be mired in your anger, your grief, your guilt, without encountering the part of self generating that feeling. In other words, the feelings are on the surface, but the aspect of self feeling them is still left alone and untended. So you would likewise score yourself a high number. Chapter 3, Lessons in Reckoning. The serenity prayer used in recovery programs is a good recipe for reckoning with life's difficulties, especially when the second sentence is added, which is, grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference, living one day at a time, enjoying one moment at a time, accepting hardships as the pathway to peace. Reckoning is changing our relationship to problematic situations, relationships, or aspects of self by cultivating the honesty, courage, and humility to face the source of distress. By doing so, we live from a more authentic self, and our decisions are less controlled by fear. Coping is like cutting the tops off of our weeds. Reckoning is pulling our weeds out by the roots. All change requires that we let go of something, usually something that's safe and familiar, and open up to something different, which doesn't yet feel safe and familiar. That is why change requires courage. The secret for learning how to create inward change is to develop a tolerance for ambiguity and uncertainty while we are letting go of old habits and perspectives so that we can open up to new insights and experiences. Deep breathing helps during transitions because it gives space to our demons so they loosen their chokehold on us, cutting off our air and our power. We should also reach out for help during these times. Living from a dimension of integrity often occurs by discovering a needed lesson. The lesson is simply the vehicle to achieve the honesty, courage, and humility, because the purpose of the lesson is not to teach, but rather to help us be. We have to open up to the ways that we are dishonest, cowardly, and proud. Otherwise, we create illusions that keep us from owning these very human qualities that are part of our truth. Recognizing our human frailties can be done with a lightheartedness so that we don't get into a prideful, I'm such a terrible person, syndrome. When helping other people, we have to remember that reckoning is the other person's journey. We shouldn't enable avoidance behaviors by trying to solve problems for them. Providing encouragement and support are a better way to help. We have to have the courage to ask some hard questions, but it's up to them to provide the answers. Otherwise, we rob people of the opportunity to meet their interior hero. Validating suffering means that we acknowledge when we have a problem. It is a willingness to acknowledge and bear witness to our difficult experiences. We sell people short when we don't respect their capacity to suffer. We miss the opportunity to affirm their courage in carrying their load. Enlightened perspectives are not gained by trying to blot out experiences with quote-unquote positive thinking. An experience becomes positive when we are not afraid to embrace it and struggle with the changes that the experience requires of us. To grow, we have to let go of who we are so that we can open up to who we are capable of becoming. Chapter 3, Self-Awareness Exercise, entitled Changing Our Relationship with Lost Aspects of Self. This awareness assignment has 5 parts to help gather outlying puzzle pieces of self. 1. Review your life story from Chapter 1. With each significant event, think about the lessons you learned and the qualities you cultivated. Write down or draw the lessons and qualities beside the picture or words on your life story. 2. Review your life story more closely. It will take scrutiny to realize which lessons were not really lessons, but merely shields to keep you from feeling inadequate, hurt, rejected, angry, or other difficult feelings. For example, remember Evelyn's story from Chapter 3. The result is not a lesson, but rather a fear that is probably controlling you and keeping you from a more expanded self. When you discover a fear, ask yourself how this fear is now controlling you and keeping you from a more expanded self. Which areas are you using a coping process rather than a reckoning process? And how does this relate to the so-called lessons you have learned? 3, in what ways are you perpetuating what others did to you to cause you to lose yourself? For example, if your father abused or neglected you, in what ways are you now abusing or neglecting yourself? In what ways do you need to develop healthier interior aspects of your own? For example, growing an internal father who loves and protects you. 4, review each event and relationship on your life story. In what ways have you used illusion, cowardice, and pride to keep you from achieving healing? And remember, we all do this. It's a survival mechanism. There's no need to be ashamed. If anyone thinks that they do not do this, it just means that they are too dishonest, cowardly, and proud to see it. 5, select one event that you feel ready, willing, and able to change. What are you going to have to let go of so that the change can occur? And what will you need to open up to? Chapter 4, Lessons Worth Beholding. Our weaknesses and faults are not the abominations that we imagine. They are not the things that set us apart, but rather the things that unite us in our humanity. Finding meaning in our abominations so we can learn and grow is often precipitated when an aspect of self that had previously been slain into unconsciousness becomes integrated. When that happens, we experience wholeness, also known as healing. When this happens, we are no longer alone, but rather we are able to be with all the world. Beholding is experiencing a newfound peace with the circumstance because the relationship to the problem has shifted. Once this inward shift has occurred, we receive energy from our deeper selves and our integrity is restored. People often verbalize the shift of energy by saying something like, "A load was lifted off my shoulders." We gain real power when we let go of pride and willpower and allow ourselves to be broken open so that we can acknowledge our needs and ask for help. As a result, we're able to inhabit ourselves more completely. Problems challenge us to birth honesty, courage, and humility within ourselves so we can effectively respond to the situation. If we fail to do this, then our suffering is wasted, and it will likely be perpetuated until we let go of our fear and open up to the changes that we need to make. Once we make these changes, we are able to behold a future filled with hope. Peace replaces chaos and pain. Beholding seems like a passive process, but it's not. To recognize, acknowledge, and appreciate life-giving moments is an active process that creates space for more of them to occur. The hero within is the place inside ourselves that touches God. The Crescent Moon Bear and other myths provide a map for personally accessing the hero within. Suffering is not a tragedy. The tragedy is not redeeming the suffering. Beholding experiences occur with people who view suffering as a doorway to awakening. The primary difference between ordinary people and heroes is that heroes don't waste their suffering. Chapter 4 Self-Awareness Exercise, entitled Redeeming Suffering, Integrating the Puzzle. Review the pieces of your life story. Your awareness assignment has 4 parts. First, reflect on the following 3 perspectives about suffering. In the opening of this chapter, Joseph Campbell asserts, "And where we had thought to slay another, we shall slay ourselves. Where we had thought to travel outward, we will come to the center of our own existence." Also reflect on this perspective. My own perspective on suffering began when I realized that I needed to cultivate courage to redeem the suffering I had experienced. I started observing people in my life whom I admired. I noticed that the primary difference between them and myself was that my heroes did not waste their suffering the way I did. So I began to practice what I had observed in a very practical way. I began jogging. Exercise physiologists say that aerobic conditioning doesn't begin until I jog for 20 minutes. However, I was ready to quit after 10 minutes. My side hurt. I was hot and sweaty. I couldn't get my breath. Now, however, I persisted because I didn't want the suffering I'd already endured to be wasted. Being willing to abide my suffering and reckon with the excuses that I created to avoid it, I can now proudly say that I behold cardiovascular health. My suffering has not been in vain. In the next story you're going to read, Lorraine talks in a more profound way about redeeming suffering. She says, "I felt privileged to have witnessed the redeeming of a tortured soul, and I realized that in a very important way, my own soul had also been redeemed." So again, go back and review the pieces of your life story. And this time, use the post-traumatic growth inventory to determine the relationship that you are keeping with the 3 top-rated events or relationships on your life story. A copy of the PTSD growth inventory is on the Opus Peace or Soul Injury websites, as well as the American Psychological Association website, as well as the appendices of the printed version of this book. Third, mark each event in which you have not yet become a hero because you are still coping with the hardship rather than reckoning with it, thus missing the opportunity to redeem your suffering by growing into your larger self. And 4, consider ways in which you haven't yet made the acquaintance of your crescent moon bear. Are the interior boulders too difficult to mount? Are you afraid of the roar of the bear? Have you made the trek, but you can't quite release its hair into the flame so you can redeem the hair with life lessons? Review your life story. What suffering in your life is in vain because you haven't yet redeemed it with a lesson that's waiting to be birthed into your life? Mark each event in which you have become a hero because you climbed the mountain to face your crescent moon bear. In other words, you abided and reckoned with the hardship once you stopped coping with it by hiding, pretending, running away, or blaming others. Chapter 5. Lessons on the dimension where healing occurs. An exceptionally difficult situation gives us the opportunity to grow spiritually beyond ourselves. When we open ourselves to grow into the situation, the suffering ceases because it changes us for the better. In order to change in a way that discovers the unique meanings or the imprinted destiny, a person has to go into the spiritual dimension of himself. In this dimension, we are able to behold healing if we are willing to abide and reckon with the sources of our suffering. We are all spiritual beings here for a human experience. It's important to distinguish between religion and spirituality because people need to know that we have no interest in trying to convert them to a religion, impose personal beliefs, or urge them toward any specific beliefs at all. At the heart of all prayer is intention. Flowery words have no spiritual significance if they aren't congruent with what our heart is singing. Hospice is a type of foxhole that often stimulates spiritual questing. Questing should be encouraged as a natural way of preparing for death. Pain and symptom management is not the goal of hospice and palliative care. Pain management is an essential vehicle to the goal. The goal is healing. Dying people are fertile ground for healing. People who are dying often become more alive than they had been previously if they allow themselves to be broken open so that their suffering can be redeemed with the love of others and God. It's easy to get so caught up in the material world that we forget that the living God is dancing on our backs. While religions seek to explain mystery, spiritual awe often revels in the unexplainable, bearing witness to it. Chapter 5 Self-Awareness Exercise, entitled Spirituality. This exercise helps animate vitality. Mark your life story with activities that have engaged your spirit. In other words, things that gave you passion, generated vitality, helped you feel more you. Review your life story again. Are you currently involved with enough activities that feed your soul? Are there any activities from your youth that you need to develop or reinvest in now? If you're not taking care of yourself by nurturing your spirit, what does that mean about the relationship that you are keeping with yourself? Review your life story again. Mark the people and events that fill you with gratitude. Do you need to add any other people or events that you're grateful for? Pretend like you died today. What would be left unsaid or undone? Chapter 6, Lessons in Forgiveness. Forgiveness is the secret for living in the now. Every time I am told no by God, another person, or life itself, I have to actively forgive the world for things not going the way I had hoped. Then I can re-encounter the ever-present now. I re-establish peace in my world. Keeping our feet wiped on a daily basis helps us live and die healed. Though it is true that we cannot change the past, We can change our relationship to the past, and forgiveness is the means whereby we do that. Forgiveness is being willing to open my heart again to a person, a situation, or myself. A closed heart blocks the energy of my larger self. Boundaries can be set with an open heart. It's important to assess where someone is on Scott Peck's disorders of responsibility spectrum, which ranges from no guilt to excessive guilt. We need to respond differently depending on which end of the spectrum the person is on. Don't take people away from their guilt. Help expose the guilt so it can be examined to see if the person needs to be responsible for righting their wrong, or, conversely, to let the guilt go if it's irrational. Willingness to forgive is an essential, often forgotten, element of forgiveness. Affirmation or prayer can help achieve this. For example, writing or saying, "I intend to forgive whoever it is. Help me be willing to do so." Believe your eyes, not your ears. Saying, "I'm sorry," doesn't count until actions change. Until then, focus on loving and taking care of that part of you that is hurt and wounded. Forgiveness can turn into enabling if care is not exerted. Abused people need to touch their anger and hurt and coax them out of hiding so they can be used to take a stand with their abuser. Being overly forgiving of others sometimes keeps hurt aspects of self exiled, reinforcing the original betrayal. Only when we reintegrate the exiled aspect of self do we achieve forgiveness. Once forgiveness occurs, the abuser no longer controls the abused. Stockpiling transgressions of others, which is blame, or self, which is shame, is the recipe for making bitterness. Bitterness is a poison that contaminates even the most innocent heart. It is venom for the soul. Forgiveness may be the simplest and hardest thing each of us are asked to do. Not forgiving may be the most foolish, because then the person or situation is still controlling our ability to love. Chapter 6, Self-Awareness Exercise, entitled Forgiveness and the Now. This exercise will help you integrate puzzle pieces so wholeness can be restored. Review your life story. Is there anyone or anything in your life story that you want to change your relationship with so that you can open your heart again? How does forgiveness play a role in this change? And remember that there's a difference between forgiveness and reconciliation. Are there any ways in which you are being overly forgiving, enabling others in their dysfunction by making excuses for them? Remember to believe your eyes and not your ears. Truly remorseful people change their lives with actions, not words. In what ways are you betraying aspects of your own self by enabling others? At which end of Peck's disorders of responsibility spectrum do you tend to perceive the world? In other words, not assuming enough responsibility for hurtful actions, or assuming too much responsibility? What is your guilt or your lack of guilt saying to you? What adjustments do you need to make so that guilt can open you to your larger self? In what areas of your life have you practiced so-called false forgiveness for hurts that you have sustained? In what ways are you now perpetuating the original abuse to the aspect of yourself that was hurt or shamed? What steps do you need to take to reintegrate an aspect of self that has been hurt so that then forgiveness can be extended? Henry David Thoreau said, "To regret deeply is to live afresh." What do you need to do so that you can live afresh? What have you not forgiven yourself for? What do you need to do so you can open your heart again to the part of yourself that is left exiled? Chapter 7, Integrative Letter Writing Lessons. Developing the honesty to identify loneliness and then using it as a passport into solitude with the unity of our soul helps us inhabit ourselves more completely. We can similarly use our hostility to encounter hospitality. Developing the courage to confront our own illusions about who we are and who we are not is the first step in becoming ourselves. The difference between segregating a situation into unconsciousness versus integrating it into consciousness is you. The former squeezes some of you out, while the latter creates more you. Suffering occurs when you become less you. The goal of integrative letter writing is to create a more peaceful relationship with a person, situation, or an aspect of self that is causing distress or loss of vitality. Therapeutic letters usually incorporate the 7 tasks of living and dying healed, which are: forgive me, I forgive you, I love you, thank you, goodbye, let go, open up. To be effective, however, apologies and gratitudes should be specific. Guilt, anger, jealousy, resentment, grief, fear, uncertainty, loneliness, and estranged relationships are useful markers that suggest implementation of integrative letter writing. Keep the focus off the letter. Preserve the meaning of the patient's intent and keep vernacular are metaphorical phrases intact. Offer knowledge and experience with healing elements by asking leading questions. Negotiate how the letter will be handled and prepare the person for possible responses. Consider developing a ritual that can add further symbolic value, especially if the letter recipient is no longer alive. Chapter 7, Self-Awareness Assignment, entitled Integrative Letter Writing. Review your life story for people and situations with whom you want to create a more peaceful relationship. Write a letter to someone or to some situation or to yourself. Alternatively, you can make an audio or video recording. The letter should abide and reckon with a difficulty preventing you from becoming whole. As you identify aspects of yourself that are not whole, ask that part of self, what do you need to heal, to feel nurtured, and to feel cared for? Choose only one issue to address. Seek help from others, if necessary, in order to engage in the abiding and reckoning process. Share the contents of the letter with someone who is trustworthy. This approach can heighten the impact because it provides witness to the healing effects of integrating forsaken aspects of self into the whole. Chapter 8, Lessons in Community. Never doubt that a small group of thoughtful, committed people can change the world. Indeed, it is the only thing that ever has. To be a healing community, we have to heal our community. The talking stick format elicits deeper and more meaningful stories from the hero within. The format levels the playing field, equalizing the power for all participants, regardless of position. No voice dominates, and no voice is excluded. Healing often includes the quote-unquote belonging process, whereby we become whole by welcoming home all our banished selves. Parts of ourselves that we have exiled no longer need to hide where they can shame and terrorize us. They become belonged. Traumatized people need grounding because they tend to dissociate from their body. Imagery should focus on the body, ending with the feet. Labyrinths, imagery, symbols, music, and rituals help integrate the unconscious into the conscious. Getting, quote-unquote, wacky keeps a healthy perspective, a lighthearted relationship with our personal liabilities so we don't take ourselves so seriously. Stories help us find ourselves. There's always room for each of us in a story, even though it's someone else's story. We have to be willing to become the hero we were born to be. Then, the resources from our deeper selves become available to us. Healing communities develop into hero birthing centers. The Opus Peace staff will help you. Contact them at opuspeace.org or soulinjury.org and let them know what you want to do. They will help with the logistics. Have the courage to start a healing community. Sharing the mutual struggle within a small community of trustworthy people fosters honesty, courage, and humility, so that the abiding and reckoning processes can precipitate healing. The result is worth beholding. Chapter 8 Self-Awareness Exercise entitled, Create a Healing Community. Using this book as the focus, start a healing community of 2 to 8 people. Complete the life story exercises at the end of each chapter, processing them when you come together. Be creative. You will be amazed at the personal healing and the development of intimate relationships that develop as you grow together. After a few weeks, you might want to name your group as you see what patterns or themes emerge. The Opus Peace staff can provide guidelines for creating a healing community. This concludes the Hero Within workbook section. Unfortunately, an audiobook format does not lend itself to reading the appendices. As the author of this book, however, I highly recommend that you read the appendices in the hard copy book. Many of these appendices are also available on the Opus Peace and Soul Injury websites. The appendices give you the tools that you need to understand and apply the tools. The titles of the appendices are Appendix A, Abiding and Reckoning, a Contrast. Appendix B, Coping versus Reckoning. Appendix C, Eulogy for Joseph McCoy. Appendix D, Post-Traumatic Growth Inventory. Appendix E, Prayers for Public Events. Appendix F, Facilitation Guidelines for Quality of Life Gatherings. Appendix G, Life Review Forms and Life Tribute Ceremony. Appendix H, Forgiveness Inventory. Appendix I, Therapeutic Rituals, a Forum for Reckoning with Change. Appendix J, Development of Letters to Integrate Difficult Experiences. Appendix K, Integrative Letters. Appendix L, Letter from David to Gail. Appendix M, Guidelines for Creating Healing Communities.